This briefing is sponsored by Deloitte. Business process with less process. See what's possible when data and automation come together to help reinvent workflows. Visit Deloitte.com/US/onlyseepossible.
This is your tech news briefing for Tuesday, January 21st. I'm Kateri Yoakum from the newsroom of The Wall Street Journal in New York. Seems like every company is trying to brand itself as a tech company these days. That includes companies that do things like manage real estate or make salads or sell stationary bikes. Columnist John Stoll will join us in a minute to talk about Peloton, how it's crying tech, and how that is changing the fitness sector. That's coming up after the break.
This briefing is sponsored by Deloitte. On podcasts, you hear a lot about what's possible, but one thing is certain. No business or city achieves their possible alone. That's why Deloitte collaborates with a vast ecosystem of alliances in everything from systems hardware to cloud platforms, data migration to analytics, AI to VR. Collaboration, it's one key way to turn possible into actual. Learn more at Deloitte.com/US/onlyseepossible.
On this show, we clearly talk a lot about tech companies. There are some obvious ones, Apple, Microsoft, Huawei. And then there are all the startups that have changed our lives in recent years, like the ride-sharing apps Uber and Lyft, or food delivery companies like Postmates and Seamless. And sometimes we take a step back and think, wait, is that really a tech company? We were talking about that with columnist John Stoll the other day in our episode about the luggage company Away. And it's something he's been thinking about a lot lately, especially connected to the fitness industry, specifically the stationary bike company Peloton. So John's back to continue the conversation with us today. Hey, John, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm not on my Peloton. I just got off. So let's go.
Well, we could have been on the phone with you on your Peloton. That would have made this so much more exciting.
Yeah, but you would have, it would have been very embarrassing. I'm a low performer on the Peloton leaderboard.
Okay, so let's back up a little bit. Peloton has been in a battle with some of its competitors. It sued both Flywheel Sports and Echelon Fitness in the last couple of years. What's at stake here? What exactly are they fighting over?
Yeah, they're fighting over, depending on which company we're talking about that they're fighting over technology, patents, intellectual property that both sides accuse each other of borrowing, stealing, lifting, copying off their neighbor's sort of test scores. So this goes back several years to the beginning of a movement called Connected Fitness. Basically, you take a smart tablet, like a touchscreen tablet, you hook it to your stationary bike, and you begin pipelining in a live or archived session with a, you know, a high-level instructor. What makes it unique is the leaderboard that is available with the instructor, showing you all the people that are in the class, not just in the class proper in the physical class, but all over the world. And these numbers can balloon to, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of people. And it doesn't matter when you're taking the class. It's dynamic in a way that it makes you feel like you're taking the class in real time and competing with all these people in real time, even if it's a week or a month after the class has taken place.
So what are they fighting over? They're fighting over the intellectual property in, or this idea of the leaderboard.
Yeah, I mean, Peloton is saying we came up with this dynamic, what they call time sync leaderboard. If you think about watching an Olympic sport like swimming, and you watch Michael Phelps, you know, trying to break another record, there will be, it could be as if he's competing against the old record holder from 1984. Whomever that swimmer was that set the record before, you would see Phelps trying to beat that in real time. Very similar technology that Peloton says it spent a lot of time and money and engineering talent trying to develop. And so when Flywheel first and then Echelon second came out with bikes that operated very similar to its technology, it did move to protect those patents. Not immediately, but after those products had come onto the market.
So this is basically an intellectual property dispute in the fitness world. How strange is that for this industry, or how common is that for this industry?
I think the intellectual property, if we take it out of the tech realm, just the idea that somebody has come up with a nifty idea in fitness is very common for someone to want to protect that, whether it's Taipo or Zumba or Richard Simmons techniques or the hula hoop. I mean, there's been decades, if not a century, of trying to patent ideas that people may have been doing this for decades or centuries, and it's just somebody came up with a better name for it. Those are hard to actually prosecute because the defendants often say, this is a very ambiguous idea. This idea of using this specific routine to crunch my abs is not novel or unique. I can do it too, and don't sue me. And so they don't often hold up in a court of law. What's unique about Peloton's argument here is that they're going into the world of algorithms and data, not like sit-ups and push-ups. When you start talking about specific technology that powers software, there is a much more rich and robust precedent of companies being able to protect that sort of IP and get money, have settlements, or even cease and desist on the other end of the line.
The thing that's so interesting here is that Peloton is, I mean, obviously lots of fitness makers, you named a number of devices. Making devices for fitness is also not a new thing, but they still kind of call themselves fitness companies, and they're really talking about themselves as a tech company. So I want to kind of get back to that first conversation that we were having about what does it take to be a tech company, and why is it important that a ride-sharing app or a salads delivery service or a luggage company is calling themselves a tech company? Why is that so common now, and why is it so important?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things if you unpack that idea. So the technology enables better life, and it enables better usage. So if I'm a typical stationary bike rider, I'm going to be bored to death after an hour. It's not going to happen for me with my short attention span. So I have to turn on television or listen to music. And even that can get old, and I'll be like, I'm just going to go outside and go on a regular bike or do something else. So there's the boredom factor. There's also the lack of community factor in fitness, particularly solo sports that make them rather dull. And so when you can bring technology like Peloton says it has into the equation that actually makes people addicted to the type of, even if it's pseudo community that exists all over the world at the same time competing against each other, the instructors do it through the internet, software, data, algorithms, and have a living sort of testament in real time to how well you're doing, you begin to talk about having a solution that people would see as technology enabled and not just good old fashioned, you know, belts and nuts and bolts. Why that's important is it could be the thing that enables breakneck growth, not just fitness industry type of growth, but tech company sort of growth. We're talking double digits year over year, expansive, massive growth that propels a company like Peloton to the billions of dollars of revenue range that is very atypical for a single fitness company. The place where I work out, Lifetime Fitness, they've taken like, you know, a quarter century to get to $1 billion in revenue. Peloton's track has been a lot faster. So you've got that. You've also got the ability to charge more and ask investors to value you higher when those metrics are actually working out. So subscriber growth has been very robust at Peloton, meaning people shell out $30, $40 a month for a Peloton subscription, way more than Spotify or Netflix or Amazon Prime, to have access to the content and the real-time competitions. And Peloton can go back to investors and say, look, this group is what they call sticky. They're going to keep coming back. It's an endless source of revenue for us. We're not just selling a bike. We're selling a service. And that really is often what we think of when we talk about a tech-enabled solution. And so then investors start to say, well, okay, the typical fitness company gets this kind of multiple, but Peloton's worth $8.5 billion because, oh, we see them as a tech company. Now, upholding that narrative is really important.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen other companies kind of fall from grace very publicly. We talked about WeWork. They're valued at $8 billion, but they were supposedly worth $47 billion until investors basically realized, yeah, there's not as much tech here as just like a landlord. Is there a danger in that kind of thinking and that kind of valuation?
We're finding out the pitfalls and the benefits in real time. So WeWork is a great example of going from, you know, 40s of billions of dollars worth of valuation to $8 billion almost overnight is dramatic and intense. But a company like Uber or Lyft, which have filed IPOs in the last year or so, have really struggled to get over the initial valuation. And you don't invest in a company just for it to remain, you know, stagnant. You might as well buy a bond if you just want a fixed income, you know, that doesn't deliver much growth. I mean, the IPO of a Uber was supposed to be the sort of thing that skyrocketed. So yeah, there's companies that position themselves as tech companies, and then investors start to figure out or ask and scratch their head, is this company really a tech company? I think Peloton's valuation is much more modest. That said,
they have struggled to get over the initial IPO price, and they've shown some weakness in the months since they filed, nothing to do with the tech, but more to do with the brand. And so a lot of people would argue, well, Peloton's a great marketing and brand company, but when they make a mistake like putting out an ad that a lot of people see as sexist, you see that the share price gets hit pretty hard. And maybe it shows that this company just has a really strong brand that it needs to protect and not technology. Now, on the other side of the foot, you've got Tesla, which for years has been talking about being a tech company and has been valued very often like a car company. And all of a sudden, as they start to prove out that they're the main player in the electric vehicle technology sector, they're worth $80 billion, $90 billion, $100 billion while they leave the other guys in the dust.
What kind of impact can this expanded definition of tech company have on an industry? We've just been talking about the fitness industry, and we're seeing it. We've seen it play out in some others. What kind of impact does it have?
Well, I think you can get everybody rushing to prove that they're also a tech company. You look at some of the alleged copycats in Peloton's wake. It's not just the companies that they're suing. It's Nordic Track. It's Bowflex. It's, you know, makers of rowers and elliptical machines and treadmills, all trying to tell the consumer now that they too are tech companies. They may not even be striving to go public, but they do have investors and they do have employees and they do have customers that all also need to believe, hey, I don't want to just buy the run-of-the-mill treadmill for a few hundred bucks. If I'm in the market, I'll spend more if I can get more. And so a lot of the conventional players begin acting like tech companies. Whether that succeeds or not is sector by sector. It's very hard for a Marriott, for instance, to convince people that they're Airbnb, another company that's about to go public and has convinced everybody because of the efficacy and the ease of use of its app. People say this is a tech company, even though it's a hospitality company. It also creates this kind of momentum and energy on the positive side. Can create this momentum and energy where you get new entrants all the time. So we may see better solutions to all kinds of exercise issues or even a lowering of the cost of entry. A Peloton costs $2,500. I mean, this is a first world like premium 1%er type of product. This is not for the masses, but maybe you'll start to see more companies crowd in as the cost of the technology comes down, as the amount of people wanting it so that the scale rises. You begin to see better solutions typically come in the market. Not always the case, but sometimes the case that an industry can get better when they start thinking a bit more about how technology and data can make them better.
It's a fascinating conversation. I'm sure we're going to keep having it. John Stoll, thank you so much for joining us.
Yep, no problem.
And that was your Tech News Briefing. I'm Kateri Yoakum from The Wall Street Journal in New York. Thanks for listening.